some of the issues. The DG will have to check which one I jump, which one I don't. I'm sorry to do that. I might have missed one or two. But very briefly, I think that Honorable Member James, well, we appreciate the support that you have given in terms of trying to enter the department around the FET, the college sector. That's not the only thing we are doing, but as an anchor. This whole issue of articulation is in our radar, and it's a very urgent matter. Because so far, the relationship between FET colleges, the programs there, and universities, say FET is universities of technology, and then universities in general, it's something that has not really been driven, I would say, centrally. An FET college somewhere introduces a program, goes and negotiates with a nearby university. The university says, yeah, your name. I think we need to create a framework for that. And also drive it in the sense that if you have an overarching framework and guidance and so on, becomes important. You see, also it relates to something that we want to do immediately. Because now we have got these quality assurance bodies, lots of them now in our department. We have got the HEQC for the universities, and then we have got QCTO, we have got Umalusi. We had a meeting with Umalusi the other day. We also said to Umalusi, by the way, as well as the others, we would like to put them into one room sooner rather than later. To say, what are the implications of all this? How do they actually see it? Let them advise us as we think about it in order to also address, amongst other things, this issue of transformation, of articulation. Sorry. Yeah, the issue you're talking about in terms of demand side and all that I would say, you know, one fellow cabinet minister said to me soon after my appointment, said, you know, Zeman, don't just respond to the needs of big business. Just flood the country with artisans. Whether they are needed by big business or not, just flood the country with artisans. Because the advantage of doing that is that trained artisans are also capable of starting their own little corner workshops as SMEs, you know, and all that. We've got so much shortage in any case. But I think it is an important area that we are looking at. The government already has been providing earmarked funding to try and address the issue of scarce skills and all that. But of course, the issue is how do you determine them? I was just wanting to use an example about that. This is something that we want, amongst other things, apart from FET colleges, we want to engage universities around. Because there are certain things also that are still inexplicable in terms of blockages. Why is it so difficult to produce more black actuaries and more black accountants, for instance, just as an example? But also, there is something, we trained so much social workers 2 decades ago, and then we ran down the training of social workers. Now we are short of social workers. Well, partly. But, yes, largely also some of them, because there was no job. There were no jobs. There were so many of them not getting some decent work. But at the same time now, there is a danger, actually, that is facing social sciences if we are not careful. We've produced lots of social science undergraduates, but not masters and PhDs, which is quite critical. But we hope that this thing of getting a much more reliable database will actually go some way in addressing, if I understand you correctly, Honorable Member James, in addressing having a much more accurate way of determining these things. I'm worried because I'm agreeing with a lot of what Honorable Member Fuguza is doing today. So it looks like we only disagree in the House. Not yet. Not bad. That's not bad. That's No, just very. I think the things that you are actually saying are important. When you are asking what is coming together, we were trying to answer that. It's not just a physical movement of people or changing legislation. It's also conceptual. But not only just remaining at a conceptual level, but also so that we are able to make an impact and change the lives of our people. I've never heard about andragogics. I only know pedagogics. But I think there's a point there which we are raising, that maybe we need to think of academic support. Some universities, I know they are doing it, but maybe we need to mainstream it. That students, I mean, academic support should not just be only for students, but also would be to assist lecturers. I know this is a big issue in the FET colleges, for example. I think that it's an important issue around which we can engage the universities about how do we improve the quality of teaching, especially in those areas that have got heavy teaching loads. Yeah, stakeholders as partners, that's an important point. Some people don't like this word stakeholder like you do. They call them holders of stake. Holders of stake. And the idea of a chair for skills development, I think it's important. Bambonjani, we appreciate your support on this. I hope so. I hope things will change. Our approach with Minister Motsekga is that whilst we have two ministers, but we have one education system, we mustn't make the mistake of thinking, therefore, that we've got two education systems. To that end, by the way, we meet monthly, and we've committed ourselves to meet monthly, especially, but when we meet monthly, doesn't mean that departments aren't engaging, because by the time we meet, we need to be having reports or answers to certain things. There are areas of overlap. There are areas of overlap as well, apart from the need to coordinate whatever way, like teacher education and teacher development. It's driven by basic education, but it's higher education institutions that train. But also, there are other linkages between basic and higher education that we have to manage. For instance, one of the issues that I take with some of the universities is to say, don't sit in the ivory tower and do nothing about, or very little about, basic education, because there are lots that universities can do. In fact, Professor Mamdani provocatively argued some 2-3 years ago that the foundation of education is not basic education, it's higher education. Because, well, it's a provocative argument, but there is some point in that. I'm not saying that that's entirely correct, in the sense that in order to have schools, you need to produce teachers, and teachers are produced in the first instance in higher education. I know. Chicken and egg. No, I was just trying to make a point that what I like about that argument, even if it is incorrect, or we may not agree with it, he's highlighting what role should universities be playing in relation to basic research into primary school education done by universities. You know, one of my advisors always complained that there is no chair of primary education studies, for instance, in any university in this country. Yet that is where we have a big, big, big challenge. So there are, even including the issue of training college lecturers, by the way, universities have got a very important role to play. Yes, terms of reference we draft because we want people to comment. The members of this committee and beyond. So that, and also I share, Comrade Kanzani is gone, the issue of handling this, the DG may talk a bit more, staff and all that. By the way, together with Minister Motsekga, we met with the entire building in Paul Blige some 2 months ago. The whole staff were to go, and I've never seen so many workers in one workplace in a public institution. We had to hire a church outside because there was no place, in a big church hall where they went in. As part of trying to address this, to say, look, yeah, we want to put very big, which is, of course, both departments. Well, the president made it clear in government, you know, we do not intend to retrench anyone. We do not intend to have anyone losing his or her job. That's our approach to this particular matter. You know, the issue of private higher education institutions, private colleges, is a very important matter that we are raising. Perhaps this committee should call them, because they've got their association. You are entitled to call them because of your oversight role, because we have to register them. In fact, it's a very interesting and a very important. Ourselves, we are still wanting to familiarize ourselves even more. Of course, the department has got knowledge, you know. But myself, speaking for myself as a new minister about this terrain, you know, and how we relate to it. But this committee should actually call them what they are thinking, you know, even in relation to this. Now, Chair, I'm moving towards ending. I'm trying to be very quick because I'm conscious of the time. You know, this issue of institutional autonomy and academic freedom. If we had time, I would really like that we come and debate it in this portfolio committee. In the true sense of the word. I don't want to say much because then I end up being misrepresented. You know, one thing, our starting point is that yes, university autonomy, yes, academic freedom, but these universities are public institutions. I think that's very critical. They are not private institutions. They are public institutions. So they have a responsibility to account publicly about what they do. So the problem is that the emphasis tends to be one-sided. To say because we want our institutional autonomy and our academic freedom, therefore we can do whatever we like. We behave as if we are private institutions. That's wrong. You know, when we debated this matter in 1997, Babu Bonjana, when we passed the Higher Education Act, in this committee, we argued very strongly for balancing these two imperatives. Even the whole constitution, by the way, that we drafted in 1996, emphasizes this issue of balancing these imperatives. Because sometimes they want to behave as if they've got no public responsibility, when in fact, they do have a huge public responsibility. Academic freedom and institutional autonomy was meant to enhance rather than to undermine that. But I would like at some stage that we actually have a dedicated debate and we share our own views, maybe try to influence each other as well. The issue of communication, I think the DG will talk to it. And the marketing of Honorable Dudley, the issue of marketing of FET colleges, let me end by just maybe briefly responding to what you are saying. On colleges, the way we at the moment are seeing, visualizing this revamped, revitalized responses college sector is that you will have a range of colleges which exist. As a department, we're going to be much more directly responsible for FET colleges. But you need in this college sector your nursing colleges, your agricultural colleges, even the police college, by the way, has approached us. They want to have a discussion with us. I'm sure the issue possibly has got to do with articulation. Maybe. But those those other colleges will not be run by our department. We will provide the framework, the norms, the standards, and all that, with nursing colleges responding much more closer to the health department, just like agricultural colleges to the Department of Agriculture and Rural Development. But it's an area because really the apartheid regime, the late years, began to run down the college sector very badly. Unfortunately, if we were to be self-critical, we didn't do much either in terms of revitalizing a coordinated college sector. So that's an area that we would like this portfolio committee to be engaged with, so that we engage each other on this matter. Thank you, Chairperson. Sorry, I couldn't be briefer than that.
It was a mouthful initially, so I think you were able to respond on specifics. So thanks, Minister. The Director General.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also may take some time. I've looked at the questions and I've tried to classify them, and it seems to me that many of the questions are to do with planning. And I think Member James introduced the terminology of supply side, demand side. And I want to use that as the structure for responding to questions from a range of members. Because if we use that way of looking at the work, on the demand side, there's several people that are really asking the question, what should we be training people for and how do we know that? And is it just dictated by the market? So because students want to study computers, must the market then provide lots of opportunities for students to study computers? And what is the role of the state in guiding the plan? Now, that's precisely what the HRD strategy is about. Because, in fact, our job is to anticipate changes in the market because of how we respond to shifts internationally and as a consequence of our policies. I mean, many people will have similar experiences. I have a brother who trained as an apprentice printer. He learned how to light a set and put letters in trays. I mean, that's now completely archaic. If you don't have skills that are responsive to changes in the economy and workplace opportunities, so in fact we do need to plan. So I want you to, there's several people who asked that question. I think that Member James was asking, how do we begin to have steering instruments that enable us to plan and provide opportunities on the supply side that match to that. And so did Member Snell. So it's the responsibility of the state to be able to steer the whole terrain of education and training, which allows individuals to choose, which provides them with learning opportunities that make them flexible for the modern economy, but which also anticipate changes in the infrastructure of job opportunities that are a consequence of even our own policies. So if we have an industrial policy which sees an increase in manufacturing, we will need the artisans that Member Nranmanan is talking about. So instinctively, you might say we need that, but how does it link to industrial strategy? So, for example, if we have an economic policy that says no industrialization, it's all tourism, then that will guide how we see the demand side, which links, I think, to questions that Member Dudley has raised and, I don't know your surname. Gina. And Member Gina have asked about how do we educate consumers, because consumers, as people who are entering education and training opportunities, are often guided not only by what their heart desires, but what their pocket dictates. So you're trying to make decisions about, will I be employed? If I choose this opportunity, will I be employed? And many people would argue that's completely reliable. The free market people would say that's completely reliable. But it doesn't anticipate changes. So in terms of the questions that were raised by Member James and Member Snell, I think that's to some extent a response to it. But then once you know what we're training people for, the question is, where do you train them? Where do you train them so that it's accessible to people across the country, so that young people from rural areas, at what level do you train them? Do we know now that we need to have many people who are able to support engineers in the work? Do we need to produce enough people that the number of engineers that we produce are supported by the number of technicians that support engineers that are supported by the number of artisans? And how does the nature of an industrial project determine that over time? So there's always a kind of lag in the planning, that there's booms in the construction center, so suddenly we need engineering, there's a decline in construction center, we need less engineers. So that supply and demand thing is very complicated. When it comes to where we locate, I think that the broad approach of the current policy framework in which we will be taking forward is that FET colleges are more numerous and are more geographically accessible. So there are FET colleges across the country, but even then we need to look at how accessible those are and whether they're responsive to local needs. The economy of the country varies. The rural development strategy will talk about rural FET colleges being more responsive to rural environments, but many people would argue that that shouldn't then lock that economy into only strategies that are deemed rural. The economy of Limpopo is changing towards being a much more mining province in some ways. It's not only agricultural. So how do you get your FET colleges to be so responsive to local that the qualifications that they offer are meeting on the demand side? That links me then to the question of universities. Several members asked questions about the need to make universities that are accessible across the country and the particular challenges that were posed from Mpumalanga in the Northern Cape. We do have institutes of higher education in both of those provinces. Those institutes of higher education are in a way that is incremental, building capacity for them to be the organizers of learning opportunities. That now has to develop into the more formal institutions of a university, but again on an incremental basis. What are the economically and politically most important faculties to be established in the Northern Cape and in Mpumalanga? How do you start to create the teaching and research base? And once you've got your system responding at the level of the supply side, where we need, with what quality and what qualifications, and an architecture that creates that. There's all of the questions that members were raising. I think several people were asking questions about how we build the human resource capacity for that. Member Snell asked that question, and member Nakuza asked that question. Is how do you then say, if we have to be responsive and we need to have quality, how do you build human beings that have the necessary skills and experience to be able to teach effectively at the level that we need? And that, again, has to happen at the same time. The state has particular responsibilities, but that's why we need to see the sector as a whole, is that the universities need to be working in partnership with the FET colleges to develop the intellectual strength for the FET colleges to be up-to-date and effective teachers. Now that is happening in terms of the qualification framework for college lecturers that is being developed and has been published for comment by the Department of Education. But universities need to come to the party in terms of very close relationships, which again leads to the portability issue. Now, Member James, I'll communicate with you separately on that. But in fact, the Minister is currently considering a proclamation which will, after consultation with stakeholders, stakeholders of state, now be in the public domain for stakeholder consultation about the requirements that are set for progression into higher education from the NCV. So in fact, that is already in place and will be the subject of huge debate. There's going to be a time frame for debate. Universities are concerned about whether or not they'll be able to implement it in time for next year. The other big set of questions had to do with the process that several people said, what is it called? Is it a merger? Is it not a merger? What is it? Well, I mean, technically it's a process of disestablishing the Department of Education. We've had a Department of Education. It has a budget for this year. By the end of this year, it won't exist anymore. It's a creation of two new departments. There's going to be a new department of basic education and a new department of higher education and training. What does it mean for the staff? Well, there are very clear processes in labor relations and in the policy frameworks. And that is that the two new departments have their organizational structures approved by the DPSA. Staff in the departments that, in the Department of Education in particular, will then have an opportunity to indicate which department they wish to move into an equivalent post at an appropriate level. Unfortunately, a person won't be able to say, well, I'm currently a deputy director, but I think I'm going to be the DDG. They have to move across at an equivalent level, and the labor unions are completely involved in the exercise of that choice. So the labor forums are going to be critical, and we need to handle it carefully because we want it to be as smooth and as event-free as possible. Once people have indicated their choice to move into one of the two new departments, we will then know which department, which posts are vacant. The only time that a post person will become redundant is if there is no equivalent post, which I cannot imagine is going to be the case, because the functions are going to carry on. If there was a function that we're not going to carry on with at all anymore, then that post would become redundant. But the labor relations processes are very clear. I think that there were very interesting questions about the policy statement and the legislation, and I just concur with the minister that this has to be a collaborative process. The minister wants a policy statement. I think that if the portfolio committee wishes to be consulted in terms of what that should cover, should be a conversation with the minister, and that perhaps that would be quite useful as a part of the process of indicating the content, what should be in the policy statement. And you might want to open that even for questions, what are members looking for in a policy statement. I think Member Lachetta's question is a very important one. I know what it means to have a constituency and have pressing issues that people want answers to, and the sense that constituency expect a member of parliament to be able to answer the questions. And I think in relation to the problem that you outline with the construction CETA and people having been offered an opportunity which now the CETA is not funding, I would suggest that the best thing to do would be to write a letter very briefly to the minister, who can refer it to me to follow up with the department. Another alternative would be, in fact, as this committee is going to be engaging the CETAs, to indicate through the chair that when that CETA comes here, this particular matter is going to be asked by a member, and the CETA should be prepared to give an answer. But it's very important that Parliament is able to have members that can report back to constituency. I also found your question, maybe look at it, about how we communicate to the public a very challenging one. Because as you can see, we've had a long time this morning to try and explain the complexity of this thing. What the public needs to know is that they've got a minister who is responsible for education and training, and he has to get the administrative arrangements in place. The fact that we're having difficulties, that it's a process, is less of a public concern, in my view. We just have to deliver. The long explanations of creating a new department are matters that some members of the public might find interesting, and a whole people want answers. And that's why, as a department and as a ministry, questions are asked, we answer. There's a delivery program in place determined by the Steward's Budget and the Program of Action. FET colleges, there's work happening. Higher education institutions, there's work happening, and that's the work that we must report on. The challenges that the bureaucracy has in getting the instruments into place is less of a public concern, in my view. It would be nice to explain it, but we must just say what we're doing.
Thank you, DG. Let me then conclude this part by saying thank you to both the Minister and the Director General and the support staff. I think we should, Member Lachetu, we actually should get the letter to the Minister, because it can be that only in 5 months we are bringing construction seats in here. So I think we should fast track that one through a request directly from you to the minister. Minister, we are thinking through and how do we, from our oversight responsibility, appreciate also our role as an activist parliament and an activist committee. And that's a time where, how do we in fact get things going? Not so long ago, I've met one or two of the teachers and said, what are you doing for three poor provinces? And I said, don't tell us about your plans and like the difficulties, but tell us what is in your existing budget that you can reposition to give support to provinces. And I'm engaging that. So members, I also would want to suggest, while all the big issues are taking place, that there is a mood out there from communities, and it's important to respond to that particular mood. The Minister, we've taken on, we had initial discussion with SACWA on the issue of the, and with the DG, on the question of the private providers. I think your suggestion is relevant, that we should in fact have a discussion with the association as well. So that will take up. We were concerned about that. I think another concern, that just to relate to you, was around, you've introduced in your initial comments, you talked about adult education. We were concerned about the RPL and the RPL not getting a appropriate institutional support. At times it's at the whim of a lecturer at university that RPL is being dealt with proactively. So that's an area that we, and I think we, there possibly is an agreement around the debate so that we can engage around the disagreement around academic freedom vis-a-vis certain strategic responsibilities. DJ, I would suggest as a final, because I've noted already earlier what you'll take forward technically, but as you roll up, as we move on the policy statement and beyond that policy statement, there's possible objective obstacles that are going to emerge. Obstacles which challenges and obstacles. And would it be possible, as we put the policy statement, the draft statement in place, that we start defining what would be the obstacle to actually get to the policy statement, not in the draft form, but in its implementation beyond November, so that we also can see how do we unbundle some of those obstacles. Because as we get into a new statement and to the policy processes, you're going to find some critical challenges and obstacles. I mean, like one of those would be the infrastructure. Another one would, as you expand massively, as the minister said, around FET intake, it is the lecturers, it is those people that are going to be there. And what is those, and how do we therefore try and list all of those as well, those objective obstacles, but also then find strategies to positively impact. Minister, with that, we want to thank you. Let's continue this discussion. We surely will, from our portfolio committee, continue engaging on this particular arena, understanding there's many other responsibilities in your broad portfolio. But skills development we've identified as something that we would want to move on speedily. And we'll take the stuff up also with the Department of Labor through the Director General, the traditional stuff. So that, thanks a lot. Members, 5-minute break, and then we'll reconvene. A request for a presentation, and I just wanted us to note of that. But let's get back to the 26th of August minutes. Excuse me? 26th of August. Now, Member Kubai indicated that on page 3, she was hoping that we could include, as part of the resolution, Remember, SACWA was supposed to give us information on RPL and I think on the illegal provider the qualification. So she just wanted us to include that one, and then the benefit of Parliament to use the to be making use of RPL, members of Parliament and members of legislatures. You'd recall that point. So those are just the two additions that she indicated before I get into any editing issues that people wanted to raise. Members?
Well, I just wanted to say on page 3, the second paragraph, there's a missing word. It says, emerge as a new quality council on trade and occupation, was not yet established, and the committee requested, the court was related, requested an explanation for the court to be there. I found no other problems with them.
Okay, cool. Members, with that, just editing, including the two suggestions made by Member Kubai, can we then accept that minute? Comfortable? Member Shwana as well as Padeva supporting it. So we'll get that corrected and I will sign it. On the 2nd of September, there is another piece. Just on page 1, quickly. Welcome the member and guest to the meeting. Is it guest with an S? And then that comma is not necessary, I think, after that. Now, this normally becomes dangerous for me to do it because remember what I said. Another language is definitely not English, right? But there's enough expertise around the table that says even your corrections are not going to work. And then program that... So, and then also that comment is just that very... And then I think page 3 we said students require various options of financial and non-financial support. I think we've made it clear that it's both financial and non-financial. Members, anything else? It does reflect what our discussions... Member Silent? Macabella?
On page 2, from yesterday, I think there are issues. Some of you are not privileged because you don't sit somewhere else where we're sitting. And there are always provocative suggestions. I'm not taking an offense. On page 2, item 2, bullet 3, and the first sentence, but the second line, remains a serious challenge. Yeah, and the other that I want to raise is the third line there. Each time we're talking the threshold, we're saying threshold limit. And to me, I thought a threshold on its own is a limit. So probably what we need to do, we may want to say income threshold, just to ensure that exactly what we're talking about. Yes. And that also relates to the last bullet under 3. It says the threshold limit, and I thought if we were to say the income threshold, should be adjusted and so on. It becomes clear. And the last bullet under 2, it says it emerged that there were inequalities and discrimination in the administration of the NSFAS bursaries in some universities. And I thought what we wanted to talk of, it's not necessarily discrimination, it may be there. But in the main, also inconsistencies between universities. What they're doing in this institution is not necessarily what other institutions will be doing, even if both of them are administering NSF. So I thought inconsistency will be more...
Can you add to
we can add, yes. inequalities, and yes, we can do that. Yeah. Well, okay. So if we just adding, we can just live with some universities other than various universities, but we could be fine. Okay.
No, he is recording the camera. We are recording. That's why he was able to get the corrected version that last time.
And then in terms of the discussion, how do we proceed on this? To the extent that we don't overkill in terms of the minutes, but we also don't not take the discussions. There are lots of discussions, there are lots of. So I'm just trying to say, how do we balance between being too much in community and existing in terms of the discussion, to the extent that everything that was said is here?
Why
do
you think this is? I think that one will continue to be an issue. But I think what we are starting to develop is also as people to input. That's why we are putting it, I think, a day before the committee normally. We are getting it out to members. Even if you want that 5 points or 6 points or the capturing of a paragraph, feel very comfortable. Because even on, but I think it was a study group minutes that I've seen, I'll just change it completely to capture, because I think we are losing at times very critical points. However, the new approach to these minutes, when I met, I think, Anneli the second time, and then I said, I don't want this is what members have said and everything, because at some stage there was that type of minute where it actually said, this is what Simon said in the meeting, this is what this one, and I felt that's really not what's required for us. So, but there, one can at times lose out valuable information, and so let's find the balancing act. But I want to suggest to members then also that the moment that you see it, also reflect on if you want to include a paragraph. At times it is just a call to the secretary to say, please capture the following also into it. Alternatively, then to bring it here and then we agree about it. Okay, let's do it via email. It actually will help. Email and
I'm supporting you as well.
I must admit, Member Salams was very shocked today, so I think there's lessons out of sitting. And let's just deal with. We are having our oversight visit today. It has now been confirmed. Between the 6th and the 9th, it's actually the 8th and the 9th, and I think we are flying the evening of the 6th that side. That's the week when I would assume the house is not convenient. And we've written to the MEC of Education in Limpopo, one. Two, I've also now written, I hope it's off, yesterday to the NCOP Select Committee on Education. We have informed the Department of Higher Education and Training. We've also written to the municipality, the appropriate municipality responsible for Giani. And really, members, the intention is to go into the province to get a briefing from the Department of Education in that province around their skill issues and the educational challenges. So that's an engagement with the department of that province. It will be an engagement with the municipality, and it will be an on-site with the FET, and then also the literacy programs that's being run. What I want to suggest is I've given Anele a kind of a draft program. He's busy typing it up, I believe. He'll then circulate it amongst members. If members feel or if members know about anyone in Limpopo or a constituency person that you believe we need to, a organization that you think is relevant to visit, please indicate that to me so that then we can change the program. But I put a draft program now together for Anele. We just didn't add it here, I was hoping, but it's not yet finalized.
So that's our visit to Giyani. The chief of advocated on this visit.
On that one, Giyani, you were talking about New Spanish. Now I'm noting that Giyani New Spanish is within Mopani, and Mopani you need the.
Thank you. The Giyani municipality itself is within Mopani, and they are both located within Giyani. Such that most of the time, when people visit them, if they want to visit Giyani, they end up visiting the district one, because they are located within the same. Why don't we say we need to visit both? That's the local Giyani and then the district one, because they are.
Remember, Shona, what we'll do is we'll invite them into the one meeting so that they both present. So the local municipality, the category B, and the district will be able then to present. So we'll do it in that way. But we'll make sure that they are both incorporated. But if there's any suggestions that you've got, please submit it to my office. The last issue then before Member James, is it only Member Gina that's from KZN in this? In our community. Okay. They're from the kingdom. What we will be doing from the kingdom is we'll us engage Peter to put a program together or intervention for KZN that has now that they've essentially agreed on it. So I also just wanted to make sure that the members of the committee, because it's really not, I'll not be able to operationally look into that in that province. So I will inform both members appropriately on that yourself, and it will be taken forward. And it's a program related to 200 to 250 young people that we've gone to see them to say, can you do something for KZN?
For my life.
We can do Pumalanga at the appropriate time. So. Member Makubela?
Around there's a further education and training kind of college, former technical college in Giyani. And the former Giyani college, I thought in the process, either if they could, in one presentation with the district or local or on their own, be given a chance, even if it's beyond what we're going for, so that we don't get there and actually get out without getting a feel of what are their frustrations, what are they doing, and so on. Just have some time to interact with them.
We are going to the Further Education Training College as part of Mopani. We are going there. As part of the actual program, the draft program, I suggested we include it. Member James, you've written to me, but if you can just share with the committee and then we'll get into the detail of the
just very quickly, members, 30% of undergraduate students on entering graduate, and they take on average 5 years to complete a 3-year degree. So it's a really serious problem. And one of the solutions to this is to introduce a 4-year-long degree that is properly organized in terms of curriculum, in terms of financing, and with a proper kind of teaching method applied to increase both the rate of graduation and also the duration of it. So what I want to do is give a presentation to you about why it would make sense to have a 4-year degree, long bachelor's degree in South Africa rather than a 3-year-long one. And I'll make provision for students who are very talented who can exit after 3 years, and students who are very talented who can exit after 4 years with an honors as well, drawing on international models. So what I'd like to do is put that to you, and if this committee can support that, I'd like to see us convene a meeting, panel discussion with vice chancellors to actually float the idea out in public. So that's the idea. I need 20 minutes of your time.
Members, can we then, this is what we want to ensure all of us are going to do, because it is, there was an engagement, there was an assessment, I know, in fact that also come, one of the points that Member James out of the social cohesion report
that's also being lifted as an issue, but there's no finality. And I think what Member James is doing is to say he has zoomed in on that and he wants to suggest that for discussion in this committee. Member Khadeva? Okay, so can we then agree so we'll time slot it in, not necessarily for next week, but I think it's going to be in October, in that first one of our first sessions in October, so we'll slot it in at that time. Is there anyone else before I close this meeting? If not, members, thank you. Yeah, sorry. Sorry?
They are
disturbing my thinking. That's not good at doing. Thanks a lot.